up the meeting a little bit, because I have some burden to say a few words to all of us. And it is at the this sad occasion of the passing of their sister in Texas. Her name is Marilyn Graber. Most of you don't know her. Even I have some knowledge of her, but still, because of many years in the recovery, there is an observation, there is a witness there still concerning our sister. Marilyn is the wife of Brother Ray Graber, and Brother Ray Graber is one of the co-workers amongst us here in the U.S. And indeed, both of them were the first saints to come into the Lord's recovery there in Texas. And I feel to say a few words, not only about our sister, but actually in a broader way concerning the churches in Texas, and also all that in context of the Lord's recovery in this country. Yesterday they had a memorial meeting for our sister there. For, I've not heard anything about it in Irving, Texas, where the Gravers lived and served for many, many years. And this Tuesday Tuesday afternoon at 1, there will be an hour of a burial, a funeral meeting there at Sky Chapel of Rose Hills Memorial Park at Whittier, because our sister will be interred in at Grace Terrace. I like to say something because of my involvement and my research and study in the history of the Lord's recovery these days. And the more I get into the history of the recovery, the more I became burdened that we are facing a risk, a danger of a certain disconnect of our past and our present, particularly in the way that many of our newer saints and younger saints do not have the kind of knowledge, the kind of connection, the kind of feeling concerning what has gone before us, gone on before us. And as they say, if you do not know where you came from, you probably would not know where you're going.
Wow.
And those who not know, another saying, who do not know the history are doomed to repeat it. So, of course, that means in a negative way. So I'm very, very earnestly burdened in these days that the vast majority of the saints who have the shortage or a lack of knowledge, and that is not to blame you, but it's a fact, to make up, as it were, as much as possible in that department. So I seize the opportunity this morning just to say a few words. The Lord's recovery began in 1921 and 1922, and this year and next year spells the 90th anniversary of that. In another decade, it would be the centennial of the Lord's recovery on the earth. When I say recovery, I mean this particular move among us in these days, as opposed to the recovery work in the history of the church that began 500 years ago at the time of the Reformation. Now, that recovery amongst us began, of course, in China. And for decades, from 1922, let us set a kind of a year, because that's the year when the first Lord's table was taken in Fuzhou, the hometown of Brother Watchman Nee. And from that year on, until 1952, for 30 years, the Lord's Recovery was under the leadership of Watchman Nee. By 1952, our brother was accused, persecuted, and sentenced to a 20-year imprisonment in China. And of course, with the new regime in China, the Lord's Recovery was halted or stopped from going on for quite a long period of time. But in the Lord's sovereignty and in the wisdom that the Lord has given to our brother Nee, he and the co-workers at that time decided to send one amongst them outside of the country in the event that the China would have that momentous political change that would not allow the Lord's Recovery to go on, which came to pass, so that the Lord's Recovery, with all that the Lord has given to it, would be preserved. That one man, or one person, that was sent out of China was Brother Witness Lee. So, in 1949, he left with his family to the island of Taiwan with the nationalist government, which to this day, as we all know, is still the case. So there, he continued the Lord's Recovery under the most difficult and discouraging of the circumstances. 1950 in Hong Kong was the last time anyone outside of China would have seen Watchman Nee. And that was the last time that Brother Lee saw him as well. It was of the Lord's arrangement that all this happened in the world situation. So from 1952 on, the leadership of the Lord's Recovery fell on Witness Lee. And from that time, for 10 years period from 52, 62, he took the lead to carry on the ministry, especially the ministry of the word, there in Taiwan and in the Philippines, in a very, very prevailing way. There was a great revival in the early 50s where the number of the Lord's Recovery grew exponentially from a few hundred in 1950 or so to, by 1955, almost 50,000 saints. But unfortunately, something not so good happened, and I would not get into that part of the history. That is, a certain element came in, another ministry, which at the beginning was a positive thing, but soon it became a source and a factor of dissent among some of the young co-workers in Taiwan at that time. I will not get into the details. In 1958, and that transpired from 1957 onwards, and that problem did not resolve itself until 1965, a few years after Brother Lee decided to move to this country here and stay here and begin the Lord's work of the recovery here. In 1958, he took his first trip, Brother Witness Lee, around the world, which included the United States. But his main destination was not the United States, but rather Europe. But he passed through here and saw the U.S. for the first time. He had no intention to stay here. And Watchman, he had always believed that the recovery work probably would fall on the shoulders of the Western saints themselves. Their job is to pass on the riches of the revelation of the divine things that we have received to them by the way of books, publications, and so on. But the actual work would not be in their hands, or so they thought. In 1960, he came through here again, this time only to visit the U.S., and then he went back. And in 1961, he came here for the third time. And this time, he, and of course, many things transpired in that period. I do not have time to get into that. But in 1962, in this last trip of his, he, after much struggle, he became clear. Struggle with the Lord, he became clear that it was the Lord's commission that he should stay in the United States and not return to the Far East, to begin the Lord's work, to begin the ministry in the Western Hemisphere. And the place where he started was Los Angeles. Therefore, in December of 1962, he moved to Los Angeles and stationed himself there and began the work. Many of you might have heard of this book called The All-Inclusive Christ. Mm-hmm. Those messages were were from the first conference ever in this country, given in December of 1962. And then in 1963, through the popularization of Brother Nee's famous classic, The Normal Christian Life, and a few other books like that, there arose a seeking atmosphere among some of the believers in this country. And soon they heard that this man, Watchman Nee, had a co-worker who is now in the U.S. And they located him, an invitation him to come to Brother Lee. And so in 1963, he began to travel all across this land, from the west to the east, from the south to the north. He's been to more places than most of us have been to in the U.S. Now, as he was crisscrossing the country, one of the most notable places was Texas. In 63, on his way to New York, he passed through Texas, and on his way back, he passed through Texas again. And he held conferences there by invitation. Now, where does the Gravers fit into this? There was, at that time, seekers in different places. And there was particularly this group of young people who were, at that time, college students, in this school called Wayland Baptist University, in this little town called Plainview, Texas, in the plains, of high plains of Texas. And there, there was a bunch of them who knew each other, and they have all gotten hold of this book, Watchman Nee's book, and just fell in love with that ministry they were seeking. They all belonged to the Baptist Student Union under the lead of this brother called James Barber, who has also gone to be with the Lord now, but had come to the recovery at the same time. Amongst this would be Brother Benson Phillips, as you all know, his wife Barbara, the Gravers. Then there were others, like Don Looper, who's also passed on to be with the Lord, and a few other brothers whom you may not know, a brother named Max Hale, a brother named Jim Coleman. I do not remember whether George Whittington was one of them, but there was this group of college-age young people seeking the Lord. And so Brother Lee never, I don't think, went to Plainview, but he went to Tyler, Texas. That's where he gave some of those conferences. And some of these ones went there to listen to Brother Lee, particularly James Barber the first time. And he taped the meetings, brought back those meetings, some of those meetings, and they would all get into a home and get around the table and listen to the recordings of Brother Lee. And based on that contact in 1963 and 64 time frame, they became followers of this ministry. And so some of them would move to Los Angeles, including Brother James Barber, and others who have who stayed behind as students would group themselves together in a small way to begin the local church life. In Plainview, in the beginning, in a very, very nascent, in the very, very nascent stage, and then later on in places like Lubbock, and also places like Waco, until 1969, when they all migrated to Houston jointly and began the first large church life there in Texas. In the meantime, starting in 63, 64, these saints, young people, every year, at least once a year, would pile into their cars and drive all the way to Los Angeles. I heard sometimes without air conditioning, in these old cars that they had, to be with Brother Lee in his long conferences and trainings in those days. Frequently, conferences are 10 days, trainings are 3 to 4 weeks, unlike our 6 days affairs now, nowadays. And they would have to quit their job because you just don't cannot take that much time off. Come here for the training, go back and get another one. This is how they live. Now, here's my point. over the years, the Lord has particularly graced, I would say, the churches in Texas with a certain spirit that is seen in what I've just described. And that's from very, very early on, they come to, I would say, symbolize what is said in Timothy by Paul as, but you have to closely follow my teaching. They really exemplify this kind of close following of the ministry from the very, very beginning. And I stand here to testify to you all, and I'm not ashamed to tell you all that I follow them. I am a follower of this spirit, of these brothers in Texas, as far as this aspect of following the ministry closely. This kind of paying the price, not caring for what, jobs, whatever, right? To just come to sit at the feet of the ministry, to hear the word, this kind of spirit, brothers and sisters, is precious. You know, these days we have to call you, we have to tell you, sign up for the winter training, sign up for the summer training. I tell you, in those days, you don't need to tell anybody. People beg, people will bang down the wall, people will get into cars, people will drive through a desert without air conditioning to be there for weeks on end, laying on the ground, on the floor, in as sardines, you know, that's all the room there was. in these houses, you know, starting in the Altadena house, and then in the house in Bonnie Bray, and then eventually in Eldon Hall, so on and so forth. It was not easy, but they pay the price, and the Lord blessed them. So not only there is this kind of following absoluteness in following the ministry, number two, I would like to say a strong precious thing that the churches in Texas are graced with through this vanguard, this first group of believers, is that they practice the ministry. They do their best to carry out whatever they hear. They don't just write it down and just celebrate. They go and practice it in whatever way they knew how. Even though they were small, they were weak, they did the ministry. They were doers of that word. That means a lot. The third thing I must say, tell you, that the churches in Texas are graced with is in their serving the ministry in a practical way. They just have this burden, especially starting in the 70s when we built this meeting hall in Ballroom, which is the training center today, which the saints built with their own bare hands. And that was under the leadership of these Texas brothers. In particular, it is Brother Ray Graver. I have to mention that. And so that was the first project. And ongoing, there were other projects. As recent as Building 8. You all know Building 8 is still under the leadership of our dear brother. What is that? That is a Levitical service, a practical service. You have to remember, brothers and sisters, in the church life, our service to the Lord always comprises two aspects: the spiritual, priestly aspect, and also the practical, Levitical aspect. We cannot have one or the other. We must be balanced to have both. And they serve in this manner. Brother Ray Graver, if anyone know him, is not a speaker, is not a message giver. In fact, he would get tongue-tied, if you will, quite easily. But he served behind the scenes, not only in building buildings and meeting halls and training centers, but very, very much in the service of the Living Stream Ministry, which was Brother Lee's publishing house, to put out publications, videotapes, and all of this to serve the churches and also the general public. And that they also take the lead, so much so that a branch of LSM was established in Irving, Texas for a good number of years. I don't know whether today they still function there, but especially in the 80s. That hall in Irving, Texas was built in great part for that purpose. One, to have the branch of the Living Stream underneath, and also on top, that large hall for the ministry meetings. Not only so, at least 2 years, there was the predecessor of FTTA in Irving. While there was a great turmoil going on in other parts of the country, including Southern California, Texas has maintained oneness with the ministry. And so our Brother Lee started to have the winter training, I believe, there in Irving, and then summer training over here. Now, the Lord covers me. I say this not to glorify any man, neither am I glorifying a group of churches. I'm not doing that. But I must testify to you all in the way of historical importance, with that particular burden, that you all should know some of these things. Now, these are the ones, these are the typical Americans, these are the typical Texans who came into the Lord's recovery, I believe, of God's sovereignty. When they came in, they were 20. Today, they're all 70 or thereabouts, these ones. And I feel that in a very proper sense, the Lord's recovery owed them very much. In this case with Sister Marilyn, of course, she was not there to build the buildings. She was not there to give any kind of messages. In fact, she's not that kind of person at all. But one have to, it would not be difficult for one to realize or to see that without a sister taking care of the home front, there would be no way for the brother, Ray in this case, and others like him, to carry on this very, very demanding, very oftentimes months on a row away from home to be in a construction site. I heard their home is still in Irving. My understanding is Ray, when he comes out here, lives in a trailer or an RV, you know, over there by Building 8. That's the way that they live. That's the kind of price they pay so that we can enjoy and benefit from this kind of a labor. This is a great, great thing. There's, in fact, a line of these men, these characters in the New Testament as it relates particularly to Paul. There were these names of these ones who served alongside Paul, who tended to Paul's practical needs and indirectly to the needs of the churches. There was the Prisca and Aquila, particularly named in Romans. And I really very much believe that our brother Ray and Sister Marilyn are in the spirit of Aquila and Prisca. Now, as to our sister, I do not know her well at all, but from a distance observing, I would say these senior sisters, older sisters among us, are really the gems, are really the precious ones, are really, I would even say, examples and patterns to the other sisters. What came to mind to me was this passage in 1 Timothy 2, where Paul spoke about the proper brothers and the proper sisters. And I'm not going to read it, but there were few words, three sets of words. One is modesty and sobriety. One is godly reference and good works. And finally, it is quietness and subjection. I believe to more or less extent, these kind of virtues, these kind of traits are exemplified, were exemplified in sisters like Marilyn and others. It has been decades. It has been decades. Now, I hope the sisters among us, would new and young, would also have patterns, would look for patterns to follow, would look for examples amongst us. And these ones who are here from the very beginning surely are the ones worthy of such imitation, worthy of such following. You see, to carry on the Lord's recovery is not just to pass on some teaching, not just to pass on some practices. No. We have to pass on the recovery in a wholesome way. And what I call the reality or the integrity of the Lord's recovery. And that is not just some words. That is not just some way of doing things. That is a reality that is often conveyed by a living, by living patterns, by living examples. You see that and you say, that is the Lord's recovery. You see that and you say, that is the spirit of the Lord's recovery. You see that and say, now I know what the recovery is about. And these ones who have been with us now for half a century, the Jubilee, I think we are the better with them. And now today we are a bit poorer without some of them, including our sister Marilyn. So I just want to take this opportunity, you forgive me for interrupting your the regular program, to share with you something in a most brief way. What I'm giving you is a most brief version. There are these ones among us. If you would open your eyes, if you would seek them out, that the Lord is able to gain such ones among us testifies to his wisdom, testifies to his knowledge, testifies to his sovereignty, that this is really, truly the work of his hands. Amen. So I hope that in this kind of times, even you don't know the person, you don't have as much feeling like many saints in Irving would have, still we would have some knowledge of it, and that we would take this occasion, as I would in these kind of times, to freshly offer myself to the Lord again, and freshly give myself again to his dear recovery, so that he can mold, he can work, he can transform, he can work in me further to make me one of those that can be the torchbearers, the ones who can carry on the Lord's recovery on this earth.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.